And my next guest, who's unequivocally one of the best in the biz, wrote this terrific piece. And it's essentially just about Paul George, man, and about Paul George coming to the Clippers and his life, his childhood, what LA means to him. And I'm reading this piece, and there's just this throwaway line, essentially, that they met in Drake's house. Because here's the thing. Drake probably has like a million homes, and he's got one in L.A. And because he knows Kawhi, he says, yeah, you want to post up there? No big deal. And all of a sudden, Toronto fans are like, turning on Drake. And it's all Ramona Shelburne's fault. Senior writer for ESPN. Ramona, how you doing?
I'm good. I know. I can't believe like that's been the reaction to that.
You didn't have any idea?
Well, no, I knew it would be a spicy little detail, but I think people are reading that totally the wrong way, right? Like, I mean, to me, that was Drake offering up his house to a friend, but also, like, you know, if he goes back to Toronto, that's like, you know, you're doing the guy a solid. He's in LA for meetings. He needs a place to stay while he's there, but also, like, he likes staying there. It's a nice place out in Hidden Hills, okay? Mm. And, That's where the Kardashians live. It's a nice little spot. Like he doesn't know that Drake, that Kawhi was using his house to have a meeting with Paul George. He just said, "Here are the keys, man." Like he didn't know. He was just being a good ambassador, right? A good friend.
I
don't know that you can blame Drake for what happened there. He didn't ask questions. He just said, yeah, you can stay there.
So I love the piece. And again, it's up on ESPN.com right now. It's circulating everywhere. You can go to Ramona's Twitter page and you can find it right there. It's at Ramona Shelburne. And yeah, it's the cover story. It's with Paul George. It's a great read. Like it was really, really interesting read. A little bit tougher for, you know, Raptors fans because they're the ones who get spurned. And there is that moment in the piece where essentially it's like, yeah, they were the favorites all along. And this is what these guys were angling at. And Toronto was basically... I think it's fair to say that they were used as a leverage point and not much else. But yeah, what you wrote was that two guys met in a millionaire's house. And what people read was Drake secretly hates Toronto. Drake concocted this meeting. Drake basically put these two guys in a room and was like, figure out LA.
Yeah.
We're in LA. We're staying in LA. This is the way that it is. My question off of it is, did you really underestimate how far Toronto Raptors fans would go to feel slighted? Because that's kind of our corner.
Honestly, yeah, like to be maybe it's my fault. Maybe I should have given more context to like Drake didn't know, you know, or I could have assigned some blame here. Like if you want to blame somebody, I suppose it would be on Kawhi, right? Like, you know, this guy who's like your friend and an ambassador for the Raptors lets you use his place and then you end up using his place to meet with Paul and go to the Clippers, like kind of using goodwill for something that's not going to be good for your friend, right? Like,
no.
But I felt like it was a distraction from the main story of, you know, why Paul George came home, which is really, it's a really nice heartwarming story of, you know, his mother had a stroke when he was six and he's really close to her and he wanted to be around. And his, you know, now that he has kids of his own, like he wants them to be around the family and stuff. And I think that emotional pull had always been there for Paul, and it was just a question of opportunity. And you know, the year before, he had passed up that opportunity to come home when he was a free agent, right? He stayed in Oklahoma City with Russell Westbrook. But, you know, when you pass that up and then you get a chance again like this, especially with Kawhi, especially on for a team like the Clippers who are going to be, like, instant contenders, that was just something, he couldn't pass up. So I was telling that story. It was a spicy little detail, but I never really saw that you could see it as a Drake was complicit. Like, no, Drake was the good guy here who just like let Kawhi use his place. Like, it's like an Airbnb.
Yes.
You hand somebody the keys. You don't ask what happens there. You just, if they mess up your place, you ask for, damages or something, but I don't know what he could have done.
He's a sympathetic figure here. It's the exact opposite.
Yeah.
He was someone who trusted his friend and gave him his place. And then his friend used that space to conceive and concoct the plan, hatch the plan to come up with getting George to LA and essentially leave Toronto. So if anything, Drake was taken advantage of and Toronto settled down. And I wonder what some of the mentions have been, because even just some of the stuff that I've seen has been absolutely hilarious. So let's actually get to the piece itself. And it's a wonderfully written piece. I really did enjoy it. I thought that it was actually heartbreaking reading the portion of it when George broke his leg for Team USA and how he internalized that, thinking about his own mother and just how, yeah, that stuff just runs so deep that he wasn't even really allowed to complain to himself, despite being right in his prime, being set for taking off in his career, being able to, you know, he's coming off of a series where he was brilliant. It really did derail Paul George's career, took a year of his prime, and now he's 30 years old. But do you think that this Clippers team needs to gel or show us something more in the regular season for you to believe that they are who we expected them to be when those two names first decided to come together?
I think that it's like we haven't seen the whole team, right? Every time I go out there, you know, you don't really know until the minute that you get there, like, who's playing, right? Is Paul playing? Is Kawhi playing? Is this team going to come together at all? And I still kind of believe that they're the top contender in the West, right? I picked the Lakers to win it, but I think the Clippers are a better team. Does that make sense?
Like, yep.
I think, like, in a 7-game series, I would take LeBron and AD over anyone, just because I think that pairing is incredible. But the Clippers are so deep and they're so good, and I almost don't even care that we haven't really seen them now. You guys remember from last year in Toronto when Kawhi was doing the load management thing. The Raptors were pretty darn good when he wasn't out there, right? Weren't they 17-5? I think that stat's like
awesome.
Burned into my head or yep. something, you know, something along those lines. And they felt like a team that was sprinting towards the playoffs all year long. Like Kawhi might be load managed, but the Raptors had been sprinting, right? And they were that good the whole time. And so I think it's just one of those, I think it's one of those stories where it's like, this is how the Clippers are playing it. I'm sure management would like to see a little more momentum as they turn past the All-Star break into playoff season, but it may not go that way. I mean, you know, it may just be up and down, and then they have to turn a switch on in the playoffs.
We've learned this lesson too many times too, right? From LeBron James and especially those last Cavs teams here in Toronto, which is, you know, we did this whole spiel about how, yep. man, this Cavs team is the worst defensive team in the yep. history of the NBA. Like, the Raptors, is they're finally poised to beat them. It's LeBron. It's over. And then it's like, sweep. It's over. You're done. Pack up your bags, everybody. Mm-hmm. Go home. And so I don't think anyone's going to write off a group with Kawhi and Paul George. And I know them being fourth in the West seems like more of a footnote than a lead. But I will say the difference that I feel watching Kawhi with the Raptors versus Kawhi with the Clippers is that even with those games where Kawhi was out, they had this pecking order and everyone was kind of geared to play around Kawhi. And the one thing they were going to do better than anybody else, yeah. and especially what they did when they got Marc Gasol, which is they played defense. They had this identity that was built in. We're going to follow Kawhi's lead and we're going to basically try to play the way that he does. And with the Clippers, it just still feels like when I watch Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell, that they're playing yep. on the team from a year ago, and that he and George, while they've improved their chemistry, it still feels like at times they're taking turns with who's the centerpiece in the offense. And that's kind of the one thing I do want to see, is maybe just a little bit more buy-in, that I do feel like they're more of a team than a collection of really talented individuals.
Yeah, that's a fair point. But I almost think it's out of necessity, you know, like, Trez and Lou Williams had a great season last year. That they have they run the pick and roll, and like, even though you know it's coming, like, you cannot stop it. It's just such an effective way of playing for them that it feels kind of like, yeah, you wouldn't want to give that up. And Kawhi, I think the messaging that he gave to the Clippers in free agency, but also I'm pretty sure he gave the same messaging to the Raptors, which is he can't play where it's everybody revolving around him, where he has to carry as heavy a load as he did in the playoffs. I think he long-term knows that that's not sustainable. That's part of the load management. And so the Clippers have a really deep roster, and they maybe can't position themselves to just be like, okay, when we get to the playoffs, we'll just rise and fall as Kawhi goes. They have to be able to play if he's not out there. They have to be able to play where another all-star, which was what was important to Kawhi in the recruiting of him, right? In free agency, it was like, get another all-star. Mm-hmm. I need another wing guy to complement what I do, because, you know, long-term, I think that's just, he knows his body and he feels like this is the only way for him to win and contend long-term.
Yeah. And I still think they're the highest ceiling team in the NBA. They're still the one that you look at on paper right now and go, well, yeah. Especially if they even make a move, which, let's say they address the center position, they try to go out, maybe get a bigger body, someone who plays defense. There's no group that you say on paper can look better. It just, yeah, it still just feels like a little bit, there needs to still be that buy-in where somebody sacrifices something. Somebody sacrifices a little bit of style of play in order for them to be their best selves and their most complete selves. And the other thing I really thought about as I was reading your piece was, do you think these guys ever cared about actually being the LA team? Or do you think that was just such a complete media concoction that all of us were doing? Because, you know, you see Ice Cube and he's going out there and he's blasting them about not going to the Lakers and that only the Lakers matter. And Kawhi gets booed when he goes to the Rams game. That it kind of felt like a big story in the moment that these guys made this bold move to try to be LA's team and never would be. And then I read the piece and it's so much more about family and being back home that you kind of sat back and got like, oh, that feels dumb now.
Yeah, I really think it is about family for both of them, honestly. And I think the more you dive in, you know, because people, they both gave lines like, we were Kobe fans growing up, but we actually liked the Clippers. Mm. You know, we weren't Laker fans necessarily. Mm. I thought at the time that was just something you say now that you're on the Clippers. No, that's real. Like, I talked to their high school friends. I talked to their high school coaches. Like they were both admirers of Kobe Bryant, but not actually Laker fans. And I don't know. I grew up in Los Angeles. I don't know anybody who was like, not a Laker fan if you were a Kobe fan, right? Like, yeah. I've never met anybody like that, right? And so it's weird to me that both of these guys were, but I don't think the Clippers necessarily had as much to do with, okay, we weren't Laker fans growing up, and that's why we're going to the Clippers. I think the LeBron factor is a much bigger factor than anybody realizes and acknowledges here, right? Like, it's not just going to the Lakers, okay, or going to the LA's other team or the underdog team or whatever it is. It was, do I want to play alongside LeBron or not? Okay. And both those guys had the opportunity. Paul George had that opportunity the year before, and Kawhi had the opportunity this summer and chose to go and try to dethrone LeBron and try to take LeBron down rather than be on his team. I don't think it's like a personal dislike of him. I think that's the challenge that they both wanted. Like, they don't want to be defined as LeBron's sidekick. And that, I think, is a really big part of this. So I think to answer your question, it's all of it. I think the family part is really big for both of them. I know it is for Paul. I mean, there's like, you know, his parents are at every game. There's like 70 Georges around. I mean, that was a funny part of the story. Like, there's even people around him who are named George that are not related to him. Like, his security guard's last name is George. I'm like, you're not actually related to him, but your last name is George? Okay. So, you know, I think with Paul, it's like he's really enjoying being home, being around all his friends and his family. Same with Kawhi. I mean, I see him after games. He goes out with friends and family all the time here, and I think that's big for him. But, you know, if they were choosing between the Lakers and the Clippers, it maybe was more of a choice of, do I want my own team or do I want to be part of LeBron's team?
Again, we're talking to Ramona Shelburne, senior writer for ESPN. She's got a piece up right now that you can go read if you want to be mad at Drake for some weird reason. And it's the ESPN cover story, Paul George Comes Home. Yeah, and I think that it was pretty clear from the jump that George, and you also outlined that in the piece, that, yeah, he wasn't thrilled that the Lakers wouldn't give up assets to go out and get him. And I'm guessing that even after he saw them go all in for someone like Davis, that maybe it made it even feel a little bit more hurtful that as the hometown guy, as the Fresno guy, that, yeah, I think was probably a bit of a Lakers fan. It did seem like he was rumored that he wanted to go there for such a long time that, all right, you get part of why he stayed in Oklahoma City would be that he didn't even entertain LA. He just wanted to not basically be a Laker after they didn't side on him. And that with Kawhi, the run that he went on, it would have been so strange to go be the best player in the NBA, kind of get that mantle, go run through Giannis Antetokounmpo in the season that he had, and then go join LeBron. It never felt like a fit.
Yeah.
But everyone in Toronto always understood him leaving because the reason that we never knew anything about Kawhi Leonard here, that we knew so little, and that maybe we even underestimated him at times, is that he keeps it so close, and it's always family. It's family, 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 yeah. And you don't get leaks when the only people that know things are, you know, five people that are always in the same room with you. And the responsibility or the weight of having to decide to stay in Toronto and move your entire family and have everyone who loves living in Los Angeles move to a different country, move to a completely different climate, it's like that's a heavy, heavy decision. And I think that people came around on it. I want to bounce one thing off you before we wrap this up, and it's kind of a half-baked idea, and so bear with me. I don't mean to ramble, but I'm watching I read your article yesterday, and I watched the Thunder game with the Raptors last night, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has been really making waves up here. I'm sure it's about south of the border as well with the, you know, 20-20-10 triple-double. And, you know, Ja Morant has been basically like Kendrick Perkins, your colleague who was on yesterday, is now calling him already one of the top five point guards in the NBA. And that with no Warriors, it really does feel like there's this, every team in the NBA has kind of had a moment this season. Even if you go all the way down to Charlotte, who essentially is completely been irrelevant for years, they get their Devontae Graham story, right? And that every team has owned a little piece of this season. And I can't really remember it being this way. And I wonder if you think that's just a byproduct of where the NBA is now with so many different teams having stars or good young players, or if this is more to do with the Warriors' power vacuum that's left, that all of a sudden everything feels a little bit more meaningful because there's hope to win.
Yeah, it's a good question. Okay, so personally, I'll give you my personal opinion first, and then I'll give you my, you know, my professional opinion. Personally, I miss the Warriors, right? Like, I was always one of those people who – I like dynasties. I think they're good for the NBA. I'm on that side of that argument, right? I don't think it sucks the air out of the room. I think it gave everybody a fundamental choice of whether or not they wanted to try to compete for the dynasty or wait for it to end, you know, right? And compete against the dynasty or wait for it to end. And so, like, I liked it. I liked watching the Rockets twist themselves into a pretzel trying to, you know, concoct this Frankenstein kind of team with all the different, with Carmelo and, you know, Chris Paul and James Harden. I mean, I thought it was revealing, but it actually has, as you pointed out, like, it's been a nice season with the 800-pound gorilla out of the room, right? Like, it's just, you know, they don't, it just feels kind of nice now where you don't have to compete with, like, the team of destiny again. And, you know, there is room for it. There's oxygen for everybody now. It's also, there's something about it with the duos, you know, they're not trios or super teams right now. There's just two good players on a lot of teams. And that's kind of refreshing too, right? It's not like such a star-driven league. And I think that quote from Kyrie Irving last night was the first time I heard anybody sort of yearning for the super team that hasn't been, you know, in a while. I think it's been a nice year, a nice refresh year. I'm really curious to see what happens in the Eastern Conference, right? Because it feels more wide open than it's been in a long time, especially now with Kawhi out of the conference too.
Right. It just feels wide open, but also that if you get there, you can win. And yeah, I like the way that you put it, that with there's oxygen. I like dynasties too. I usually resent them in the moment. And then the second they're about to leave, I'm like all nostalgic and sad that it's over. Like with the Patriots,
exactly.
I rooted against the Patriots forever. And then watching Tom Brady walk off the field, all I'm like is like, I'm a Seahawks fan. Like, they broke my heart. They shattered it into a million pieces. And I'm sitting there going, just come back one more year, Tom Brady. I don't want to have this be over.
It's just the Patriots, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. So,
but I do think the Warriors come back, guys. I think this is a gap year. It's like they just took a year off after high school before they start college. I mean, everybody's just getting healthy. So, and they'll reload. You know, the fact that the bottom has really fallen out. Like, now they're going to have like this top three draft pick. Now they're going to have, you know, a lot more assets to work with here. The young players they develop, like. We've definitely not heard the last from the Warriors.
I was just going to say, I know I'm not ready to. I know they still exist because as you were saying that, I was getting anxiety. Like, I'm going to be so pissed when they get a top three pick and they flip. They flip a couple of pieces and all of a sudden their roster looks really complete and Steph and Clay come back with probably a little bit more, I don't know, vigor, something to prove. and they just stomp everybody out, and we're back to, well, how many more years of this are we going to see? It's going to happen. I know it's going to happen. Ramona, you're the best. Yeah. Thanks so much for making time for us today. This was a real treat.
You know, I never thought I would find myself in this position.
Yeah, Drake's enemy.
Caping for Drake. Yeah, I'm like defending Drake or something. Like I almost feel bad because it was like a little detail that people just took the wrong way.
I think Drake will be fine. I think he's going to survive this one. That's just my gut. I tend to be in the camp that thinks Drake is still going to be rich, famous, and popular.
Maybe just a little more discerning about how he lets use his house, I guess.
Yeah. Good luck with dealing with his camp, though. I'm sure someone from his PR team will be reaching out to you shortly if they haven't already.
No, I actually haven't heard from them. They're okay.
Well, that's good. Because he's okay. Ramona, the piece is up on ESPN. Please go check it out. Thanks for doing this today.
You're welcome.